talk a little bit about the policy environment for some of these kind of issues that were talked about in the last two papers, so health information exchange and the policy side of protection of trying to protect the privacy of protected health information, patient health information. And so to think about these issues that are under consideration right now in policy, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to look backwards a little bit into what we can learn from the Fair Credit Reporting Act and debates around that, both back before it was passed in the 70s and ongoing, and then also look today at some of what patients actually expect and how they think about these kinds of issues. A few acknowledgments. Sharps is funding this work, so thank you to Carl and others. Okay, so I don't know how familiar people are with the policy environment around health information exchange, some of the issues we're just talking about, but the accounting of disclosures is a policy idea that was in HIPAA, and HITECH proposed strengthening the accounting of disclosures, really revising and fully describing how you would carry out accounting of disclosures. So in 2010 then, following HITECH, there was a notice of proposed rulemaking for how providers, covered entities, physicians, hospitals, would be required to carry out accounting of disclosures. It's essentially patients' right to receive an accounting of disclosures of who their information is disclosed to or who accesses their medical records. In response to that notice of public rulemaking, there was a huge outcry. Many 400 plus public responses to the HHS on this, mostly from providers, describing real concerns about both what I'm going to call a supply problem and a demand problem around trying to do this accounting of disclosures. So the supply problem, briefly, and as I'm thinking about it, the supply problem is really probably the issue that people in this room are much more interested in or could have something to say about, but we're just starting to do the study of the supply problem. I can talk a little bit about it. So providers are concerned about that it's very costly for them to conduct audits of their system, to determine who has accessed the record, even to determine who has who the protected health information from records has been disclosed to, even though Carl talked about faxing as if it were the past. But the majority of your health providers are still using fax as the primary information exchange mechanism. And so even with that, they don't keep good records of this exchange. There's now requirements that for sort of formal disclosure, there have to be documentation, but there's a lot of information exchange that isn't sort of counted under what's called disclosure to a third party that is not documented or tracked in healthcare. So the providers talked about how costly this was going to be, how much time it was going to take. They don't have the data storage capacity. They don't have the systems that can do this kind of audit. And this is why I think people in this room have a lot to say about it. Obviously, Carl and his group are working on this. But I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about the demand problems, which they also described quite a lot. So the demand problems primarily were patients are not interested. They don't really, they're not asking for this information. They care, sure, they care about who's accessing their records, but they don't really express concern to us. So they talked about the providers in these response to the rulemaking say, well, we get very few inquiries. So Medical Group Management Association, a large representative of physician practices, said they get essentially no requests, none. Kaiser Permanente was a little more forthcoming, and they said they get about 7 per month per facility. So it's like, okay, well, they have a lot of facilities. Kaiser Permanente is large, so they have, 650 facilities. So, 55,000, is that a lot? Is that a little? They've got 9.5 million patients in there in Kaiser Permanente, so that is less than 1% of their patients are expressing concern or inquiries. Is this a lot? Is this a little? Kind of is the question, but the providers are saying there's so few patients interested in this, why do we have to build the infrastructure in order to do an accounting of disclosures? The other big concern on the patient demand side is that even if we go to the trouble to do these investigations, acquire all this data, put it into a giant stack, the patients will not understand the data. Patients aren't aware of the extent of information sharing and disclosure that already goes on, and if we start describing that to them, or we just give them a document that says all of these people who received their information, patients won't understand it, so it's going to require all kinds of time and effort on our part to help patients understand that. These are the main concerns. Okay, so I'm going to think about this demand side a little bit, and can we learn anything from history? So now for another policy issue that you probably don't care about, but the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which you might know, regulates credit reporting agencies that collect all of our data about every loan, every piece of credit, employment history, billing history that you have. So you probably know a lot of this. And it is reported to not only credit and insurance, but also employers, licensure agencies, etc. So it's designed to protect the privacy of the consumer and to guarantee that the information is correct. A lot more information, but just to, it's very comparable to what the accounting of disclosure is trying to put in place for protected health information, is what's in place already to protect our credit information. There are definitely some differences, but it's that the CRAs have to keep track of everyone they've disclosed your information to. They actually have to keep track of everyone who asks for your information, even if they then don't disclose it. They are required to give you information about this if requested. Okay, so prior to the Fair Credit Reporting Act in 1970, the credit bureaus, as they were called then, the credit agencies, made arguments quite stunningly similar to what the providers are saying now. But consumers never ask for this information. They don't care. They don't. They don't complain. They don't ask. And it's going to be hugely costly for us. It's going to maybe affect the extent to which we can respond to our real customers, who are the banks and the employers and the licensure agencies who ask for the information. And besides, we're doing a great job ourselves already. Pretty much identical. I mean, it's stunning when you go back and read the hearings, which we did, from 1968 before the passage. It's almost exactly the arguments that the providers are making today. Just to provide some counterbalance, this was before, this statement was made in the 70s, after the first initial 1970 ruling, and there have been subsequent amendments to the Credit Reporting Act, including in 2005, and again a little bit with Graham, the most recent changes to the after the financial crisis, and the providers still say less. The credit reporting agencies still say that less than 1% of consumers express concern or raise issues. And just to show that we might be concerned about them reporting on themselves, the FTC in 2012 did a report. 1 in 5 consumers actually have errors in their credit reports, and 5% of those have very serious consequences. But it is true, it's about 4% of people file disputes on their credit records in any given year. So not a ton, but we might still is that a lot, is that a little? And there's also lots of activity that the credit reporting agencies are not necessarily doing their job. Okay, so that's the past, and that it the Fair Credit Reporting Act is a is an interesting model because the arguments are the same, and yet I think most of us and the federal government then said the concern about citizen privacy in something related to your credit, which can have such a significant impact on your ability to get insurance, your ability to get employment, and other kinds of things, mattered in such a way that it didn't matter what the credit reporting agency said, it was put into law. Okay, so just to switch gears a little bit, now let's jump to the present and let's think about demand in another way, which is how do consumers or patients actually think about these kinds of issues, which is another way to think about demand. We did a survey of consumers in February and March this year. Consumers, citizens, patients, whatever you want to call them, people, adults living in the United States, a national probability sample. These are the characteristics of the people in our sample, just to give you an idea. About 80% have private health insurance, 87% made a healthcare visit in the last year. We didn't only want patients, we wanted everyone. About 78% had a regular provider, and 60% reported having a provider who uses an EHR, just to put some of this into context. Okay, so what do they think? First, we asked them some questions about just how they even think about using electronic health records or health information exchange. Most people are very positive, right, about it's important for their doctor to have an electronic health record. Doctors should be able to share the information. It's important for me to be able to get access to my medical record through electronic means. So these are not people who, in general, we would see this as positive, the consumers wanting health information exchange, although, you know, not 100%, as you can see, so there's definitely concerns out there. When we ask them, is it important to say, it is important for me to find out who has looked at my medical records, you see 66% agree that they should, it's important for them to be able to do that. I should be able to find out who my doctor discloses my medical information to. 91% think that they should have this right. So we might think about patient demand this way. Only 4% or some, less than 1% at Kaiser are raising concerns, but that doesn't mean that people don't expect that they should be able to do this or to get this information. Now, this isn't also a perfect measure of demand, what we might want to call demand. Just because people say they want to have that doesn't necessarily mean they will ever ask for it. And so the concerns by providers about the costs of supplying the accounting of disclosures information is real, but this is just to counterbalance a little bit the ability of the providers to make to define the situation as that there is no demand. And then we just also had some information that I thought people might be interested in. So this was to try to get people to see how people think about what they already are able to do within around their protected health information. What kinds of consent can they give? How do they think about this? So, most people say they are confident or somewhat confident that they have some say in who is collecting and using their information. They have some say in whether their information is shared with people outside of other than their doctor or provider. And they actually seem to think that there are safeguards already in place protecting their health information. So they'd probably be surprised and concerned to be sitting in this room today to find out how little is out there, because so it is consumers want to be able to do that, think they should be able to, and they also think it's possible already. Okay, so just some implications for thinking about this policy debate that's going on that you know, has not been decided. The notice of public rulemaking was put out in 2010, and essentially HHS has not ruled on it yet because there is still so much ongoing problems and debate. This little paper is really just to say that demand, thinking about demand for any kind of service or behavior, should not equal current behavior. That is one element of it, but just thinking about what people are currently doing is probably not adequate to tell us what their actual demand is. Like I said, just asking them, do they think they should be able to do this, 91% yet say yes, I wouldn't say that's adequate either, but that's another piece of the story. So expectations and values, as well as current behavior, I think, matter. The supply concerns of providers are also definitely important. We're going to be doing a study this fall to get some objective estimates around the actual costs, both in time and technical capability and actual resources that providers require to do investigations, to do an accounting of disclosures, because we don't have very good objective data on that. And then just finally, that we might think, as with the Fair Credit Reporting Act, that it's not just about supply and demand. I mean, I think those are two important ways to think about it, but we might also want to think about citizen rights or patient rights and values, like we did with the Credit Reporting Act, when we think about this accounting of disclosures issue. That's it.
Any questions for Denise?
I think what a nice provocative way to come to the end of the meeting. Concerning the supply side, here's a question that I am curious to hear answers from providers with respect to on this. A question that when they did the panel hearings on this in front of the HIT policy committee, nobody bothered to ask, which was, there are research papers that show that in 1993, already in 1993, providers would make lists of who had access records available to employees so the employees could see who was accessing their records. And so why it is so expensive and difficult to make this available to the public when it's available to hospital employees is something I haven't understood from the providers.
I mean, that's a great question, because we have the same question. It's that they have been able to do this. Some of them are doing it with now their electronic medical record systems for employees, but they regularly say they cannot do it, or it's very onerous to do it in general. And they also say, so the accounting of disclosures rule has changed a little bit, but it's either they must keep the data on access to records for either 1 year or 3 years. Initially it was 6 years. And they said, that is impossible for us to keep that kind of information. We don't have the storage capacity to do that. We don't have the, technical capacity to do that. So I would put that challenge out there. Does that seem like a reasonable claim to an audience like this, that is a reasonable position for the providers?
Only if there's a lot of data. Only if there's a lot of data.
Yeah.
In which case it's more important to maintain.
Yes.
Storage is cheap, doesn't cost anything. I don't buy that. David Coates, Dartmouth. It seems like the barrier might be, at least for view and download, right? The buzzphrase these days, view, download, transmit. You want to make it possible for patients to be able to view their records, download their records, and transmit their records. And I would couple that with the disclosure as well as the content of the records. And I think one of the concerns some vendors have is on authenticating the patient if they're coming in from the internet. How do you know it's really this patient that's asking for their records or their disclosure history? And then the other is formatting it in a way that's readable, I suppose. I mean, it's easy to push raw data at people. Now, I don't buy those as being insurmountable problems either, but is that what you're hearing? Is, oh, it's too much trouble to be sure that it's the right person who's coming to ask for their records?
No, actually, that isn't. So it's not the portal question that this is really about at all. So the accounting of disclosures isn't even requiring that it goes to the patient, that they can do it from home or across the network. Their argument is, we cannot do this in our system and then turn over a report to the patient. So it's not, we're not anywhere close to.
It's more about the back end than, you know, being able to record it.
And it is true that they have many multiple systems in place. So that's the issue. Even when they have an electronic record across, they have many other systems that provide data into their data records set. And so what their argument is, to access, to audit each one of those is, you know, not as easy as just sort of auditing the access log for the electronic record, which I think has some truth to it. Now, still, how onerous really is that is the question.
And I think it's fair to say that patients will have difficulty making any sense of what else they get.
Right, right.